Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Happy Monday and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor. I'm Michelle Pache and I'm here with Dr. Michael Rice. We warmly welcome you to the show and thank you for choosing to be with us. Today is June 16th, 2014. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169. Press 1 and that puts you into queue to talk with Michael. We encourage you to call in with your comments or questions, allowing you to actively strengthen and deepen your practice. So let's welcome Michael in the process of learning and experiencing forgiveness.
Well, thank you, young lady. It's a delight to be here. We have a beautiful sunny day in St. Louis, Missouri, which is where I am. I think I'm in my 8th city in the last 4 weeks. So we're on the road. Jeannie's back in Bristol, Tennessee, waiting for the family reunion. She'll be flying into Springfield, and I'm in St. Louis and getting ready to do a couple of workshops here. If you happen to be in the St. Louis, Missouri area, we're going to be doing a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop tomorrow night from 6:30 to 9:30, and 6:30 to 9:30 on Wednesday, we'll be doing Healing Through Relationships. So if anybody would care to join us, if we open workshops, we'd be delighted to have you. And it's interesting, with it being a Parent-Teacher Talk Monday, here I am sitting with Adeline, who is just a little better than 2.5 years now of revolving around the sun with us. And so I'm getting to kind of play parent role today, which is kind of a fun opportunity. Of course, I get this privilege of being able to hand her back. And I just had breakfast with my daughter and with Krista and with Adeline and Krista's stepdaughter. And so we just had some breakfast, and kind of an interesting conjunction of things coming together in this whole process of putting together and thinking about parent-teacher talk and what it takes. I was recently exposed to and did some listening to a book that is considered to be an awesome classic. It's impacted millions and millions of people, and especially it's impacted. They go through a list in the introduction to the book of all the magnates of the country and of the world that have been impacted by Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And as I sat with my daughter and watched as she's finishing school, just finished going through getting a nursing degree and still has more schooling to do, having to pay $200 for a textbook for one class, having to deal with children and a husband who's off earning a living and gone most of the day. So having that load on them, I realize is all of that together, and I'd just like to open this as a conversation in the realm of parent-teacher talk, just that perhaps this book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, is one of the most destructive books on the planet that's ever been written. And the reason I say that is because when you look at the names in the front of it, presidents, and I'm talking about presidents of the country, I'm talking about presidents of huge corporations, et cetera, are all proclaiming how Napoleon Hill's philosophy of think and grow rich, gather money, has become their buzzword, their way of living. And I'm talking about for several generations now. And I wonder why, or I wonder if Napoleon Hill had awakened beyond his desire for money if he might have written a book called Think and Grow Family, or Think and Grow Community, or Think and Grow Loving. You know, there are so many other directions it could go, and how many millions of minds have been focused chasing the almighty buck at the cost of their family systems, their children's health, and pain. And as I was driving away from breakfast to come and get ready to do the radio show, I was listening to NPR, and there's an artist who's a millionaire over his music, and he's just released a new album, and one of his songs is about his depression. And you think about juxtaposed on a life that's got millions and, you know, got it all. I mean, he's grown rich, and yet one of the major things he deals with is his depression. And he talks, you know, they were doing an interview and they're talking about his friends who are also wealthy and the depression that strikes them. And to look at where that sources, where that starts, and I think it, to a great degree, starts with the thought that if I think and grow rich, if I have money, then everything is set in my life. And my offering is that if you have money, of course, everything is not set in your life. And this man who's done so well with his music and still lives with depression really needs to start to look at the root. And this is what we all need to do if there are cases where we're stuck with pain and sadness and grief and rage and loss and depression, that the bulk of that started right from the point of conception in the family system and in the genetics of our culture and the genetics of our family system. And there's a powerful piece that Yeshua gives us in the Beatitudes, and it's a piece that most people don't want to deal with, don't want to hear. They'd rather pretend everything's nicey-nice, and if you're doing it wrong, so what? Don't tell me, don't inform me, don't make me look, because I don't want to look at what I'm doing that's out of place. But in one of the Beatitudes, we're told that the key to accessing literally a neural structure that was implanted us to guide us in us, pardon me, to guide us to happiness and well-being, a way to make this neural structure active. One of the things that he gives instructions, and this is in the Beatitudes, the Greeks say to spin around mourning your wrongs and you'll be comforted. Not going to take you very far, but what he says is, you who love truth, you who look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society. This young man who's an artist and has made millions with his music, very well-known blues artist, has done just huge, successful things, still deals with depression because errors in thought. You know, the interviewers speaking to him about depression, you know, how much of a mystery it is and how unknown its source is and what do you do about it? And in the song, you know, they play this snippet of the song and talks about, well, you know, you just go to the bar and get drunk until it passes. And, of course, the culture says, no, you just go and get a pill until you don't feel anymore. And, of course, if you act out of a part of your mind that doesn't feel anymore, then the next generation gets to experience that same pain, that same loss, that same depression. And until we get courageous enough to look into our errors in thought and the errors of our society, to love truth enough to say, this particular attitude, this particular process of mind causes me pain, but I don't want to question it. I don't want to deal with it. I want to pretend that everything's okay. And to stop that pretense and to really look at what the root of our errors and thought are and what kind of things we acquired in childhood. One of the reasons for doing this show is to support and assist parents who are under so much stress that we live in a culture that, you know, it's almost impossible for a family today, for two people, or for one person to support a family and the other to actually be home with one focal point, and that is raising that family. Why is that? Because people decided they wanted to think and grow rich. And so in the accumulation of wealth, of course, you can't generate enough to own half of the globe on your own, so you have to use other people. And the removal of wealth from people's hands by the few who become good at the money game leaves families in a place where it's difficult to adapt, it's difficult to even maintain enough sanity because of the stresses of just how many goals do I have to live and bring up my children, how do I educate them, where do I get their clothes, gee, this is the third pair of shoes in 6 months. Where does the food come from? I have to work. And what we know is that when stress becomes high enough, then we go back to the person dynamic of that which I hated most that my power person did to me, I now do to others or to myself. And when I recognize that that becomes a dynamic, then I see that there's something that needs to change. And, of course, our primary tool is that of forgiveness and that of removing what never belonged. What never belonged in your structure is the pursuit of money. Money is a fantasy of men. Yes, we've created a culture that without it you can't survive. But the truth is it's all a fantasy of men. And when we start to work through those fantasies, then we start to change the dynamic in our lives, in our family systems, and especially with our children. And so one of the things we want to do with this Parent-Teacher Monday is gather the input of experts who are working in the field with me on a day-to-day basis to support parents and be able to handle the stresses of their lives and to really empower people to look into their errors and thought. You hear a little voice in the background. That's Addie saying something to me. I haven't quite figured out her whole language yet. Her mom understands every word, but I haven't quite gotten to where I do that yet. So, but anyway, Michelle, is Dr. Tim with us today?
Yeah, Dr. Tim is here. I was thinking, Michael, you need to build brain cells for Addie's language.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm building some brain cells. Her mother's got all the brain cells. She said something. I don't have a clue what she said. And her mom says, oh, there it is. Oh, now I understand. So, yeah, it is definitely building brain cells to be able to understand that language. You know, she's 2 and a half, so there's lots of conversation goes on.
So, I was going to say Julie Haverstick is here and Dr. Tim is here, but I don't see Suzanne yet.
Okay, I'm not sure that Suzanne's going to be on the show today, so we'll just move forward and say hello to Dr. Tim and see if he has any thoughts to share with us, any thoughts on the introduction, Dr. Tim, or anything to share on what's happening in your world.
Well, I'm in alignment with your thought about how if you're using that book and other books like or movies, The Secret, to pursue one tiny little slice of life or one aspect of life, then you get out of balance, and out of balance doesn't produce joy and love and creativity. So I'm right in line with that. And I was thinking about a variety of other things I had completely spaced out that today was Parent-Teacher Monday. So I think...
Let me fill in a thought from what you just said, and what triggers with what you just said is the opening words in the book of John, where it says, we're told in the Greek translation, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. And if you go to the Aramaic, it says, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. And what I see as so destructive with this book is so many people who have no awareness on how to take charge of their own minds simply sit. And I listened to part of it while I was driving from Bristol, Tennessee to St. Louis in the last day or so. And to see how much emphasis, if one subjects themselves to the mind energy that this man puts in the book, it's about how you get money, and then how you get money, and then how you get more money, and then how you get even more money, and here's how you get money. And, you know, that the focus on that mind energy, again, I've actually been thinking, because I think it's an open book now. It's copyrights have expired. I've been thinking about getting it and rewriting it as Think and Grow Happiness and taking the ideas, because he's got some great principles there of focusing the mind, et cetera, auto-suggestion, bunch of stuff that's pretty on track, but, you know, that he's really, with his mind energy, taking over the minds of so many people that the focus has become money, money, money. And of course, if we were to free our minds from that influence, then we could use those principles to create, you know, a more powerful presence of love in our lives, a more powerful connection to our human lives, a more powerful connection to our families and to the practice of sanity in our world. And so it's all just kind of interesting how it fits together. And, you know, I watched my daughter this morning, and, you know, again, her husband's just been promoted in his job, and he's had some struggles, and he's finally got a good job. He's in a managerial position at a hotel, but it requires him to be, you know, virtually non-existent in his home. Fortunately, on the weekends when he's off, he's really there with his family. We went to the zoo yesterday. It was Father's Day, and had some playtime. And each time I've come to town, you know, on the weekends, he's true family. And the rest of the week, he's virtually non-existent. And so here's Krista trying to handle school. She went through nursing school, just completed. High, super high stress, insane way of so-called education. But and in fact, classic brainwashing, if you look at the techniques of brainwashing, what's been done in the medical field. And so she finishes school and finds out that, well, in St. Louis, they're flooded with nurses and there are no jobs. And so, you know, we were sitting having breakfast and everybody's smiling, it's all okay. And Addie spills a glass of water, and all of a sudden, you know, with all of the stresses of trying to handle school, trying to pay bills, trying to take care of her daughter and her stepdaughter and her husband and her home, because she's got to have money, you know, all of a sudden she just breaks into tears, and the words that come out of her mouth are, it's too hard. And, you know, unfortunately, she's kind of forgotten how to apply the tools of canceling goals to manage stress, so we had a little bit of conversation about that. And it's just interesting to watch the stresses and strains that young parents are under today in a culture that has such a focus on, it takes a lot of money to pull it off. And there's no reason for that other than, you know, from the top down, it's become about how do we empty people's pockets for as much money as we can get. So many businesses, so many, you know, the utilities, the water bill, the electric bill, you know, that just get outrageous. And so the stress and strain and the struggle in a world that's abundant, where parents could be, yeah, sure, everybody has to be productive. Thinking and growing family and community and support would be, I think, a whole lot more money than the quantity of focus that's gone into thinking and growing rich. So, Julie, how do you be, young lady?
I'd be fine. How about you?
I am blessed and highly favored. Anything to share with us? Have you had any observations of parents and what it takes, you know, as a school teacher? You get a unique bird's eye view on parenting and the stresses and strains that parents are under. Do you have any input for parents who are in that posture from where the teacher sits and where the teacher observes the game?
Well, I would like to also address the Think and Grow Rich, but I think that parents are really under quite a bit of stress, attempting to manage everything. There's oftentimes nobody in the home to take care of the children, and they go to daycares, and the TV becomes the babysitter, and things like that. So, you know, I know where you're coming from, and I have seen that myself. And it certainly would take a different thought process. You know, that's where I feel the benefit of the forgiveness process and the healing, so that you can begin to, you know, just look at things in a different way. I did share some of that with my parents at different times when the opportunity lent itself. However, going back to Think and Grow Rich, you know, my first mentor had that book and gave that book to me. That was one of my first books. But he said, this wasn't about money. It was about how to use your mind and how to, you know, to create the things that you would like in your life. And he said that there was a code in there, and if I had the book in front of me, I would be able to see it. And he said that that code cannot be memorized without you really being committed. And he said, and if you actually could memorize that code and put it to memory, then you could change your life. So maybe in the Think and Grow Rich book, maybe there are, it appeared to be about money, and maybe it really was about how to, you know, use your mind more effectively and create your life differently. And that's the way
Absolutely.
I was taught. Yeah, that's what I was taught from my first mentor. And he said that through all the people that he has shared this book with, there has never been one, and he had worked with a lot of people, he said there's never been one that's been able to memorize that code. And so I did work on it, and I did get it memorized. And I feel like whatever mm-hmm. that was, that has benefited me moving forward in my healing process.
Right. Yeah, it is definitely a book about how to manage your mind, and that's of extreme importance. And sadly, as I say, I think the copyright on the book has expired. I've actually been thinking about getting it and taking it and just substituting, you know, family, happiness, community for the word rich and giving people those tools, because there are principles in there that are powerful, but it's just mm-hmm. such a focus on money, 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 rich, 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 rich. And, you know, as you look at the people that it's influenced, there's a lot of riches, but, you know, having a lot of riches while your kids are committing suicide, cancel the thought, is pretty crazy. It really isn't where it's at. And so, yeah, I'm in agreement, and I've been looking at perhaps, as I say, getting it and rewriting it with the focus, instead of being money, into the things that are really important. And if we do the things, you know, there was a guy 2,000 years ago that taught people mind control. You know, if you look at the origins of what are called the religions, it's all about mind control. Not a particular person or religion controlling your mind, but teaching you how to take charge of and control your own. And you look, and he knew where the secret was, where the real secret was. And he said, seek ye first your relationship with the Creator, with love, and all other things will be added unto you. And if we could put those principles to work in our minds to back that one up, then we'd have something that would be really powerful.
Well, I agree with you 100%, and I really think it would be a great idea to rewrite that book. I do think the book has, it inspired me. I do think there was a lot of good things in there. I think my mentor's teaching supported me actually going back and getting my degrees. So I never really got the teaching from him that this was all about money. So he must have been able to use the book in a more effective way, because he was talking about pretty much the same principles you are talking about, that there's the right. inner truth.
Right.
And what I'm reading from Michael, what I'm getting from your comments isn't so much about the content of the book, but it's about how the title is so focused on rich in terms of the concept of money. Your interpretation of that word is that it's about money. And
well,
the people that I've really heard work with the concepts in the book the way that Julie's talking about, they keep emphasizing that rich in spirit, rich in relationships, rich in health, and there is a lot of focus on creating wealth in terms of financial wealth. But the people who really dug into that book and studied the concepts that I've liked to listen to have talked about it the way others have. Like Wallace Wattles wrote a book titled The Science of Being Rich, and another one titled The Science of Being Well, and another one titled The Science of Being Great. And he's using the same principles to talk about the physical wealth, the physical health, and greatness in terms of reaching you whatever your God-inspired inspiration is or passion is.
Yes, and again, I'm in full agreement. The principles are there, and the thing that has me say it's perhaps one of the most destructive books ever written is, again, where it could be community, family, health, wellness, well-being, the word is money, over and over. Yes, some people see through it, but when you look at the list of people that he refers to that have used his book, I think a significant number, it appears at least, didn't get past the money word into these are principles for creating abundance in all areas of life. You know, we do a workshop on creating consciously, which is about creating abundance, and kind of a last leftover thought is money, because that's the last end result. But really, it's about, and again, the principles are there, So I'd like to see it rewritten to the things that are truly important in life, and money isn't one of them.
Yeah, Michael, Esther and Jerry Hicks, Jerry Hicks spent a lot of time with that book, and I think even maybe some time with Napoleon Hill, and he said that he taught that book for years and years. And Jerry Hicks at one time lived in such poverty conditions, he lived in chicken houses. So Jerry Hicks has left his body, but he left his body as a millionaire, but that it took him right into the field of healing, true healing, and being supportive of healing. But he said that, and through all the teaching time that he used that book, nobody ever got it and just didn't get it. And he did I think it was a CD that I listened to him talking about when he used that book, and he was so inspired by the book and it seemed to help him be able to move forward with his life, you know, and create Esther in his life. And, you know, but he was really surprised that people just really didn't get it. So, you know, maybe possibly the book was written as a camouflage, and that it is time to rewrite the book so we take down the camouflage and allow the book to present itself to so it would share, you know, a deeper meaning for all of us.
Absolutely. That's my highest thought. And when we shift the focus into, again, what's really important, again, that guy Yeshua 2,000 years ago, I mean, he had it all handled. And, you know, seek first your relationship with the Creator. Seek first the relationship with love. And then everything else falls in place, because in that space is our creatorship. And certainly there's lots of motivation in Hill's book, and just a slight shift in mind energy. And we could be literally living in a different world. My thought is that if some of the magnates who took that on and made it about money had been given a different word and given different mind energy, we might not be looking at the slaughter that's happening in the Middle East today over money. We might not be looking at the fact that the six largest arms producers and sales countries in the world are the six permanent members of the UN Security Council. We might not be looking at the need to hoard money when we could be supporting families and, you know, for a pittance of what's spent in killing people on the planet, every family in the country could have a safe, secure space in which to live and to raise their children in security, because they wouldn't have to be out struggling for enough to fill somebody else's pockets with wealth, but everybody would be satisfied with a reasonable amount that, you know, instead of having to accumulate. You know, there's another scriptural principle that comes in, and I tie this all back to parent-teacher talk, because so many parents have been influenced by this. But you go back, and there's a scriptural principle that says you have the right to as much land as you can use, occupy, and possess. You know, and somebody who's got 800,000 acres of land can't use, occupy, and possess 800,000 acres of land, and somebody else goes hungry. And it's just, you know, the whole game just needs to shift around. Just, you know, a little tweak in the mind energy, a little tweak. Ah, what if Napoleon Hill had gotten these presidents and these, you know, heads of corporations and these heads of state to focus on think and grow powerfully loving families in your country and in your world? How different could the game be? And so let's check in with Michelle and see if there's anybody with a hand up.
Thanks, Michael. In the chat room, Peace stated that when you were talking about money, he said it's the hijacking of one's soul, which
yes.
I thought was a pretty accurate statement. So,
is 907 on the phone by chance, Carrie?
No, I don't. Not Carrie. Nope. And I'd ask Jimmy what the other numbers were, and that's not on right now. But Julie,
well, I had
before we move forward.
Just let me throw something in that Carrie shared with me 2 weeks or so ago. You know, she's just been in Peru, and she shared the other day on the show about the manuscripts that she ran into there. And one of the first ideas in these manuscripts, which go back several hundred years on how to live in the real world, was the white man's creating a culture based in gold, and that this has been one of the biggest mistakes that's ever happened. And, you know, I think it might be, you know, I thought if she was there, she might share a little bit more about the reading she's been doing on those manuscripts. But let's see, is anybody got a hand up, or is there anything else happening in the chat room?
You're right about the scrolls that Carrie brought back. She had a radio show a week ago, and I listened to it, and it was a very fascinating conversation related to the information that she got from the angel guy, or connected to the angel guy. So as far as the hands up right now, Julie, we got a couple. So Julie from Oregon first here.
Hey there, young lady.
Hi,
welcome.
Oh, hi there. Boy, can you hear me? Yes?
Loud and clear.
Okay.
I actually just talked to Carrie a couple days ago, and she's going to be heading in your direction, so I suggested that she make sure she connects with you when she's out there, Carrie Ellis.
Good. Oh, great, because a lot of people are seeing her book. I've shown it to a few people, so anyway, first, I have a quick little question about talking about the rewrite of this book, Think and Grow Rich. Are you thinking of rewriting it, or is someone we know thinking of rewriting it?
I am.
Oh, good. I didn't hear that part.
It's a copyright,
well,
which means that if they have, it'll be in the public domain, and I could see just, you know, basically substituting that word money for family or community, or an empowered spiritual life, and the principles are there. You know, it would just help people to move in that direction. So.
Oh, cool. So, okay. Well, I came in a little late on it, but I had a response. I remember as a child seeing that book on the shelf at my parents' home, and I could read the words "think and grow rich." However, nobody ever taught me about thinking or growing or enriching my life. So I just noticed that it was a hurdle for me to feel drawn to that book. Instead, I made decisions about, you have to be able to think. Oh, what is growing? Oh, the goal is being rich. Oh, no, if I don't make that goal, then something's wrong with me, and I got to know how to think, and I don't know what that is. So all those barriers were there, and I was thinking of maybe a title that is more inviting for young minds who maybe don't know how to think beyond the title. It's like a headline, you know, and it goes into your unconscious so fast over and over again, too. So to think of a title, and I'm not trying to tell you, Michael, what to do, but it's just my hit here. Some sort of a title that's more of an open door where one feels really invited that something's going to enhance their life instead of there's some goal to live up to that's unexplained. You know, for kids, they need it to be guided. And I thought of, you know, how the New Testament was called the Good News. And speaking of books with somewhat titles, maybe that was the promo title. So anyway, that's just my sort of response. And I encourage you to do it. It'd be great.
Mommy.
Cool. Well, it's in the hopper.
Mama.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You want to say hello? Say hello. I've got Adeline here.
Hello.
And she's saying hello.
Hello. Oh, how sweet. Hello.
It's Julie. Say hello, Julie.
Hello,
Dave. Hello.
Hi.
Say hello, Dr. Tim.
Hello,
Adeline. Say hello, Michelle. Say hi, Michelle.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey,
hi,
Petey. Cool. They're friends with Papos. Cool, she's listening intently. Oh, what a blessing to hang out with these sweet faces. So anything happening in the chat room? Any questions, comments, thoughts, answers, ideas? Thank you, Julie.
Julie, are you there?
Oh, I went on mute. Hi. You're welcome, Michael. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your granddaughter.
Okay. I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
So, Michelle, what's happening?
I am in the chat room just talking about the money and the collective consciousness related to that. And Sunny's here with her hand up.
Well, let's say hello to the young lady. How can we
hey,
support
Sunny,
you today, Sunny? You got a question for us?
Yes, I do. An offering briefly, too. I don't know if you could give me your opinion if you are familiar with this written work. Reverend Brad from Unity gifted me with Spiritual Economics by Eric Butterworth, forwarded by David F. Miller, The Principles and Process of Prosperity. Are you familiar with that?
I am, yes. Mm-hmm.
You like
it? Black and white cover. Excellent
I'm
work.
Sorry?
Yes.
Okay.
I say it's
all
excellent
right.
work. I think it takes it a whole level beyond just the focus on money.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that input because I'm very focused and want to be sure of the work that I am doing in this particular instance. And then, Michael, you mentioned and seemed to be very compassionate for, obviously, for what your daughter and other parents or women or what have you are going through with the what looks like overwhelm, keeping up.
Yes.
And
I hear that one.
My big picture and the original approach back to your work this past nearly, what, a year or 2 years? With what you just explained, what would you offer, or did you perhaps offer, to regain the focus on my work here, to really put my finger on any one piece of work? It does come back to finances.
Well, my take would be when you recognize that each of us is a creator, you know, we have the workshop on creating consciously. There's a great principle in the Course in Miracles that says you can't not create. You can't not create. You're creating all the time. It's just whether or not you're creating from conscious mind energy or whether you're creating from unconscious mind energy. And I have a little one here who's saying she wants to see her mommy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see mommy in a little while, okay, sweetie? Okay, thank you. So if I'm creating differently than I choose to be creating, then I need to start to look at the part of my mind that I blame other people for. I need to start to look at the part of my mind that is hidden from me, because when creation out of that part of my mind comes forward, I talk about how somebody else is responsible for it. Somebody else did it to me. And the core tool, of course, that we're working with, we have a whole cadre of tools, but the core tool is the tool of forgiveness. How do I find the part of my mind that's showing up in this particular creation that I really never consciously intended to have? How do I find that unconscious part of my mind? And oftentimes I'm going to have to develop a set of skills that literally empower me to look at the generational content in my mind, to decode the generational content that says, you know, I'm supposed to be in poverty. I don't deserve to be able to take care of myself. I don't deserve sustenance. You know, that's just the way our family lives. So to forgive, and
right.
Literally the instant that part of the mind is accessed and removed. And I'll just share from where I sit. You know, when I first started doing this work, the first 7 years, A lot of times when I didn't know where the next meal was going to come from, when I didn't know how I was going to feed my kids, there were just a lot of times where that, you know, for a period of about 7 years, and I was actually driving down Highway I-95 in South Florida, and I had set up to do a series of 6 workshops on Wednesday evenings at the Unity Center in Fort Lauderdale. And it was the 6th week, and I was supposed to be heading back to the mountains of North Carolina. I remember exactly what I had. I had $102 in my pocket. I'm going to do this workshop tonight, and then I'm going to drive back to North Carolina, refill the refrigerator. I'd been in South Florida for about 2 months. Our pipes froze. I had rented a house to work on some writing, and our pipes froze, and I couldn't stay in the house, so I went to South Florida. And so when I set up that 6-week series of workshops, I had to give a series of titles to promo it, and the 6th title was, Still Waiting for Your Ship to Come In? Which One Did You Send Out? And I'm driving down I-95. I'm actually staying up in North Palm Beach, so I've got about a 40-minute or so drive, and I'm driving down, and I'm almost to Hillsborough Boulevard, and I'm contemplating, you know, with $102 in my pocket and whatever donations come from the workshop tonight, how am I going to get back to North Florida or to North Georgia and fill my fridge and carry on with my family? And literally, my guidance, the voice in my head said, Michael, you either believe what you're teaching or you don't. And if you do, then what you need to do is get off the highway right now and go to a bank and take $100 that you've got there in your pocket of the 102 and turn it into a $100 bill and give it away tonight at the workshop. To which my mind said, what? Are you crazy? And I got off the highway at Hillsborough Boulevard. I found a bank, and I got a $100 bill. And I created an exercise where I talked about the scriptural principle of giving and, you know, that you're going to get a return of 10, 100, yay, 1,000-fold. And everybody agreed they wanted the 1,000-fold. And everybody agreed they wanted $1,000,000. So I said, okay, so now take out the $10,000 from your pocket and get ready to give it away. Well, nobody was quite ready to go for that 1,000-fold promise. So I said, well, how much are you willing to give away? I already knew what I was going to do. I had $102. I was going to put $100 in my hand. I had everybody either write a check to cash or roll up whatever they had in money that they were willing to give away, stand up, and walk around the room and hand whatever was in their hand to the person in front of them. We called stop. Everybody stop, whoever was in front of them. They'd hand, without looking at it, they'd hand whatever was in their hand to the person in front of them, and they'd receive what that person had. And then they'd walk around the room for another, you know, 45 seconds or so, and I'd say stop. And we did that about 5 or 6 times. I ended up with a $20 bill. The biggest piece of processing that had to be done was the $100 that I had given away, and there was a woman who also gave away a $100 bill. And the two people who got those $100 bills were trying to give them back. It was, no, this was an actual giveaway. This isn't a pretend exercise. You got that $100. That's great. It's yours. And the uproar about, no, I can't. It's like, well, so now look at how you work with receiving. And so I left with a $20 bill that night. I borrowed some money from the people that we were staying with, the fellow that I was staying with that invited me to South Florida in order to get back and fill the refrigerator. Went out and got in the car amid protests of, Michael, you've just gotten things going down here. You need to stay. And it's like, no, I've got a workshop in Atlanta. I need to go back to North Georgia. Got in the car, you know, loaded the car fully, put the kids in the car, got their seatbelts on, put the key in the ignition for the first time in I don't know how many thousand miles, turned the key, and nothing happened. The car was totally dead. There wasn't even a click from the dead battery. It was totally, completely dead. And I said, okay, I take this as a message, and I unpacked the car, and I stayed. And the next week, I had a full-time practice, and I made more money that week than I had made in any week since I started doing this work, which is about 7 years. And it's never dropped below that. Expenses have gone up. We're doing a lot more projects, but it's never gone below that since. That was a moment where my creative process, my mind energy turned around, not because I gave away $100, but because I chose to, what's the best word I can use? I chose to bring the principles into another level inside myself and hold them as true. And that as you give, you receive. And we can say that in our heads, but until that gets into the level where our creative process happens, which is in our hearts, that's not going to be accurate for us. So I can only share my experience in that regard. That was the moment, and that goes back now. You know, my daughter was about 2, and she's now 32, so that's 30 years ago. And it's never dropped below that since. It never went near that in the 7 years before that. Now, prior to that, I was in the business world. I had an Eldorado on one side of my driveway. I had a Mark III. I had a penthouse apartment in one city. I had homes in 2 other cities and businesses in 2 countries and turned over a lot of money. But I held a belief in my creative process that if you're going to do spiritual work, then you have to be in poverty. I was just, I don't know whether, you know, somebody said that to me or I was taught that or it's something I just made up or came through osmosis and being brought up, but it's what I held. And that day was when it changed. And that day, everything in the external world shifted how it worked in relationship to me. My interpretation would be I got to open that part of my mind that held my block and was willing to give away what was in my hand, knowing that there's a principle behind it. So I can share with you what my experience has been, and out of that process has come the workshop on creating consciously and looking at those principles that, you know, everybody, a big challenge for us to look at is for everyone to see that everything in your life is exactly the way you want it to be. Now, most people say, well, wait a minute, Michael, you haven't been reading my mail. This isn't what I've been asking for. No, I didn't say everything is the way you've been asking for it to be. I said everything's the way you want it to be. And your wanter's not in your head. Your wanter's in your heart or your unconscious. And according to the accumulated genetic and environmental information that you hold in your heart, in your unconscious mind, the part that we've been taught in this culture to deny and dissociate from, according to that, our lives are created. And when I change that, then everything starts to change. Everything, it has to. It's the principle.
And I do understand what you're saying. And
of course, the trick isn't to understand it. That's our head speaking. I understand.
I have your
the trick isn't to understand it. Hold a second. The trick isn't to understand it. The trick is to open and get it into your heart, into the level of your mind where you're a creator. Otherwise, it's head understanding. And, you know, head understanding and, you know, and $5 gets you coffee at Starbucks. it's not worth
right.
the powder to blow it to hell.
Right.
You've got to get out of your head. You've got to be out of your mind. And get it
right, and some of what is really kind of happening, Michael, because you did really help me in the process of terror, and yes, whatever is inside of me has come fully to the forefront, and in the reality, my daily reality or actuality, however you want to put it, I am really walking through some stuff here, and attempting, to, you know, just doing my very best to maintain the space. But as I said, it is such a flurry of activity to really get my hands on a proper piece of work to really do my worksheets through. And it may or may not be appropriate for the radio show in the moment, and I appreciate your support here. I don't know if anyone who knows me personally enough that's listening now that might be able to assist beyond the radio show to help me get a pinpoint on this, but it is truly vital in the moment. A lot of things with system, our legal or, you know, outward system of life that I'm going to need a lot of prayer and action right now. So I'm grateful to you, Michael.
So here's my input. I walk through life connected to the active presence of love. When life delivers something to me that resonates something that's less than love, that's my next piece of work. The idea isn't I need a psychiatrist to lay me down on the couch for 5 years and find the deep, dark, dirty thing that happened to me. The idea is to make a commitment, you know, get a copy of the commitment to myself from the website. I promise to trust myself enough. And use that every day. And when you're not able to be in that connected space of love, look at what your object of attention is, and there's your next worksheet. There's your next piece of work to move through. And, of course, along with that come all of the tools that we teach, all of the above.
Yes. So I walk through life connected to the presence of love and the recaller. Will I have to replay this, the whole show back?
No. No, don't need to do that.
I'm writing
it here. The situation
okay.
that I deliver myself into that brings up that which is less than love is showing me what my next forgiveness project is. And so
okay.
I want to be to let go of that or be willing to just hang out in it and go, well, here's my creative process right now. Maybe I need to wallow in it a little longer before I get tired and sick of being sick and tired and make some really deep gut level changes.
Yeah. I love you, Michael.
All right, blessings. Hold the space.
Okay. All right.
All right. Michelle. Down to about 50 or about 5 or 6 minutes. Time flies and you're having fun. And while Michelle's sorting out what's happening in the chat room or on phone lines, we'll just say that we've got a Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop tomorrow night at CSL on Fifi Road in St. Louis, up on the northwest side of town. And then on Wednesday night, and each workshop will be totally self-sufficient, so you can make one night or the other or both. And it'll be from 6:30 to 9:30, free open workshops. Why Is This Happening to Me Again tomorrow night? And Wednesday night is Healing Through Relationships. So, Michelle, anything happening in the chat room to be aware of? Anybody with a hand up?
No, quiet in the chat room. And I asked, actually, I invited anyone to have a question or comment for Michael and did not get any takers, but Peace made funnies about that. So we're having fun in there. Nobody's with a hand up right now, so you're right. Got 5 minutes to go here until the stream's complete.
Well, let's see if Dr. Tim or Julie have anything else to share with us, or do you have anything to share with us, Michelle?
You know, Michael, I had a client this afternoon at noon, and she is pretty new to me, and so at 1 o'clock I excused myself to do the intro and such, and she was agreeable. And what is so fascinating to me is the topic that you were talking on about money and all the despair, disintegrative energies that can often come with it is related to some of her struggles. And so we're just looking at each other like, can you believe this? And she's very intrigued, and I shared the website and the process. And when she heard you say Course in Miracles, she's like, oh, I've got that book at home. And so she's going to go and open it up again. And so I'm quite delighted today to introduce someone new to the work and someone who seems open and receptive and ready to heal.
That's awesome. Very cool. It's interesting how this resonating universe operates, isn't it?
Yes, yes. She's shaking her head, yeah. It's like it's we're
oh, glad you're still with us. Hi, it's nice to meet you.
Okay. Thank you very much. I enjoyed this very much.
Awesome. Delighted. Glad to be on the team. And your name is?
Your name? Marianne.
Marianne. Nice to meet you, Marianne. I hope we'll get to play more and more as the days unfold and as the tools fit. There's a whole cadre of tools that we're here to share, and
Thank you.
Glad that you're joining us to be part of it.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome. All right, Dr. Tim, anything to share with us to kind of bring the show around to completion?
Well, I would just say that I've heard your story about the moment of awakening, and I just, it seems like every time I hear that story, I get a little bit deeper resonance for the idea of feeling it and acting it as opposed to understanding it, and to move out of my head and more into the felt heart space. And once I'm completely congruent with it, it just gets easier and easier to take action on. So that would
absolutely
be my input.
And it takes time.
Yeah, well, there's. I saw that the other thing that I was going to mention, and your intro kind of took us away from it, and yet at the same time it's right in line with it. But you had a Facebook post back and forth with Michael Coughlin, and I was going to say something about how you've been busy setting up triggers for people again.
What?
And,
no.
And of course, then your intro was a trigger, I'm sure, for a lot of people, because it's attacking one of the most popular books on the planet. And I just, my input to myself is, all right, go do the worksheets and see what else comes up. And I really particularly liked your idea with Michael about using the codependence worksheet in that process, because as I keep trying to remind myself, as I teach others, I will never be upset about anything anybody else ever says or does, unless I'm still judging myself negatively for having done the same or similar things.
Right. Cool. We're down to about 60 seconds, and maybe the conversation will continue tomorrow. That's an interesting reality that it was an attack on that book, but for me it's simply looking at the fact of the destructive effects of the focus on money, and I think it's an awesome book. You know, that's why I'm considering putting in there that the important things, if it were a rewrite, that the important things would be, instead of money, family, commitments, relationship, human life. So we all have our realities, and mine's certainly a different one. But in any event, we appreciate everybody who's joined us. We'll look forward to continuing the conversation tomorrow, and we'd love to have your thoughts. Bring us into the show tomorrow. And create the best yet of your eternal life. It's the most powerful gift you can give. Blessings. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Evolving continuously.